On this Sunday night, a legend gone. Entertainer Jerry Lewis has died. He spent more than 60 years in show business, but his greatest legacy may be the billions he raised for charity. Nuclear tensions are region on edge as the U.S. and South Korea plan joint military drills. Could it provoke a response from Kim Jong-un? Historic find. The wreckage of an American warship is discovered deep in the Pacific more than 72 years after the Japanese torpedoed her in the final days of World War II. And dance dreams. How one summer camp is making a difference for hundreds of kids with lessons that go far beyond the stage. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Jose Diaz-Balart.
Good evening. Kate Snow is off tonight. An American icon has died. Jerry Lewis passed away in Las Vegas today at the age of 91. He was a beloved star of the screen and stage, but may best be remembered for those annual telethons to raise money for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Lewis was passionate about that cause and the children he helped, who called themselves Jerry's kids. Tonight, the MDA said his decades of devotion can be summed up in a motto that Lewis would often quote. I shall pass through this world but once. Any good, therefore, that I can do, or any kindness that I can show to any human being, let me do it now. Let me not defer nor neglect it, for I shall not pass this way again. Tonight, tributes are pouring in across the country. Our Miguel Almaguer takes a look at his life and legacy.
Most of the public saw him only as a funny man.
You say you love me, and I've loved you, living and loving.
But Jerry Lewis was a lot more. During more than 60 years in show business, he was an accomplished dancer, recording artist, actor, writer, director, philanthropist, teacher, and inventor. The son of vaudevillians, Lewis dropped out of high school and at 15 took his comedy act on the road. But it wasn't until he teamed up with singer Dean Martin that Lewis became a star.
Within 2 years, these two guys who were almost out of work were making movies.
Martin and Lewis became two of the highest paid entertainers of their day.
A divorce is the only way out.
On the 10th anniversary of their partnership, they split.
I knew we went to the pinnacle. Where were we going to go from there?
Lewis launched his solo career.
Why, I'm not out of order.
He appeared in more than 50 movies, beginning with The Delicate Delinquent in 1957.
Mr. Warshefsky, had you learned anything in your first class?
Only this morning, looking in the mirror before shaving. I enjoyed seeing what I saw so much I couldn't tear myself away.
The 1963 film, The Nutty Professor, is considered by many to be his masterpiece. He even tackled Broadway.
Jerry Lewis!
But to many, Lewis is best known for his telethons for muscular dystrophy. He raised more than $2 billion in 40-plus years on the air.
To Mr. Jerry Lewis!
In 2009, that earned him his only Oscar, the Jean Hersholtz Humanitarian Award.
He was good at anything he tried. We've lost, I think, someone whose life really echoed the American century. He's an extraordinary man.
At 91, Lewis passed away peacefully, surrounded by family. He lived an unforgettable life. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News.
Another passing to note, legendary comedian and civil rights activist Dick Gregory has died. Gregory was one of the first comedians to use humor to confront civil rights issues. He rose to fame in the 1960s and then parlayed his stand-up career into a life of social and political activism, becoming friends with Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. Later, he also became a nutritional advocate and motivational speaker. Dick Gregory was 84. As President Trump returns to Washington tonight, there is word from the White House that he plans to address the nation on a new strategy in Afghanistan. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell has the details.
Returning to Washington after a crisis-laden summer vacation that seemed anything but restful for the country. A new development late today. The president will unveil his plan for U.S. forces in Afghanistan in a primetime address Monday night. after a strategy session with his top advisors at Camp David Friday. And while nuclear tensions with North Korea are running hot, flying today, Defense Secretary James Mattis.
Once he announces what the strategy is, we can get more precise on Afghanistan troop levels, what we're going to do.
On the home front, Tuesday, the president heads to Arizona for a campaign rally, reconnecting with his political base amid fallout over the racially fueled violence in Charlottesville. Concerned Republicans say President Trump's condemnations of white supremacists were cloudy.
It's going to be very difficult for this president to lead if, in fact, that moral authority remains compromised.
Trump supporter Jerry Falwell Jr.
It could be more polished and more politically correct, but that's the reason I supported him, is because he's not.
Following the White House shakeup that expelled the hard-right nationalist Steve Bannon, a call for stability.
The changes have to stop, and we have to have a team. You can't keep putting new people in the lineup and think you're going to win a world championship.
Democrat, former Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson said senior officials should not be pressured to resign.
I'd say absolutely not. You have to stay. It's country first. And we need people like John Kelly, Jim Mattis, H.R. McMaster to right the ship.
Tomorrow night, the president will speak to an in-person audience of service members at Fort Myer Base in Virginia and the nation by extension with his third primetime televised address. I'm told the president will be specific about numbers for Afghanistan in terms of troop levels, and he will also talk about his plan to get countries in the region like Pakistan to assist with intelligence and diplomacy. Jose?
Kelly O'Donnell, thank you. A programming note, NBC will carry the president's address to the nation live tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific. Meanwhile, a new NBC News poll shows many Americans, even Trump supporters, are embarrassed by the president, and it is impacting his favorability in three important states. NBC News political director and moderator of Meet the Press, Chuck Todd, is here to explain. Chuck.
Well, Jose, look, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, they were the three states that put Donald Trump in the White House, three states that a Republican hadn't carried since the 80s. So we thought we'd check in there specifically. And what's interesting is they look like swing states. His job approval rating in all three states is basically what it is nationally, a little bit lower in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin than it is in Michigan. That's somewhat notable, probably worth keeping track of over time. Does Michigan end up being more of a Rust Belt state that stays in the Trump column, more so than either Wisconsin or Pennsylvania? But look at these proud versus embarrassing numbers at the end here. This is something that should trouble the White House. When you have 64%, it means some Trump voters are calling themselves embarrassed by the president so far. Jose, some tough numbers for the president, but obviously he has plenty of time to try to turn those around.
Chuck Todd, thank you. There are ominous new warnings from North Korea tonight in response to the U.S. and South Korea's planned military drills this week. NBC's Bill Neely has the latest from Seoul.
Stunning new images tonight from Kim Jong-un's North Korea. Propaganda posters that show the U.S. Capitol crumbling, destroyed by missiles.
We never know which way he's going to turn. He's not irrational, but he is unpredictable.
That unpredictability is being tested again tonight as U.S. forces prepare exercises on the Korean Peninsula this week. These in April. Tensions still high after threats from President Trump and from North Korea.
The military exercises that start off South Korea are loathed over there in the north, where they watch U.S. troops practicing to kill their leader.
This week, though, the exercises are different. Not live fire, mostly underground computer simulations involving 17,000 U.S. troops and 50,000 South Korean. But no B-1 bomber overflights. Defensive, says the U.S. Provocative, says North Korea. U.S. officials do expect some response to the new drills, but no sign yet North Korea is planning any imminent launch.
Kim Jong-un may have paused his plan to fire missiles towards Guam, but that hasn't solved this nuclear crisis or ended the tension at this most dangerous of borders.
It's still nerve-wracking, there's no doubt about it.
Families like the Raiders are among nearly 250,000 Americans living in South Korea.
South Koreans are
if anything, they're more worried about what the American government's going to do now more than what the North Korean government's going to do.
The war of words may have cooled, but military options like military drills are still very real. Bill Neely, NBC News, Seoul, South Korea.
Tonight, police in Spain are intensifying the hunt for the driver of the van that killed 13 people when he plowed into the crowds at Barcelona's Las Ramblas last week. Officials say there is reason to believe he could have escaped to France. Meanwhile, authorities say a dozen suspects behind the attacks are now either dead or detained. In the U.S., the fight over immigration policy is back in the headlines as some sanctuary cities push back against the Trump administration's threats to withhold federal money. In an exclusive NBC News interview, Attorney General Jeff Sessions talks about why the crackdown is critical, but not everyone is convinced. NBC's Pete Williams reports.
When Deputy Ricardo Cueva patrols King County, Washington, outside Seattle,
we're going to need 2 toes.
He doesn't ask anyone if they're here illegally. He says that's critical to getting the community's cooperation.
You build trust. And when you have trust, then you have people calling and reporting things.
Like dozens of other so-called sanctuary cities, Seattle has the same policy. The sheriff says it works.
That's our goal, reducing crime and the fear of crime. And we could care less if somebody is here legally or illegally, documented or undocumented.
Even people in jail, putting the city and the county at odds with the Trump administration. In an exclusive NBC News interview, Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he'll cut off federal anti-crime grants to cities and counties that fail to give the federal government 48 hours notice before illegal immigrants are released from their jail sentences so they can be deported.
They should be removed from those communities. It will make them safer. I don't think you have any objection overall from the immigrant community to remove dangerous criminals from America.
He cites the case of Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez, accused of killing a San Francisco woman after he was released from a local jail, and Sergio Martinez, accused of brutally attacking a 65-year-old woman released from a Portland jail with no federal notice. Sessions praises Miami for recently dropping its sanctuary policy and bitterly condemns Chicago, saying its refusal to help enforce immigration laws means it's not serious about lowering the city's sky-high murder rate.
Seattle and Chicago are now suing over the sanctuary issue, joining other cities who say they know best how to fight crime. Jose?
P. Williams, thank you. Still ahead tonight, a side effect of the eclipse few are talking about. Also, the naval discovery found 18,000 feet below the sea. All eyes will be on the skies for tomorrow's epic eclipse, but if you look and listen closely, there may be a show going on around you as well, as nature's creatures react. NBC's Kerry Sanders reports from Carbondale, Illinois.
You and your friends may be ready for the total eclipse, but when day turns to twilight, strange things can happen. Reports dating back centuries have revealed bizarre behavior in the animal kingdom. Records found by the American Academy of Arts and Sciences show in 1544, birds ceased to sing during the eclipse. And in 1851, a colony of ants stopped moving until the light reappeared. Another study found that chimpanzees would climb and point to the sky. So will tomorrow look like a scene from the Hitchcock film, The Birds?
My gut is there's nothing to worry about as far as animals going out of their minds or some type of chaos or animals starting to stampede or all of a sudden attacking people. It makes for a good science fiction movie, but this is not science fiction.
Ron McGill works at Zoo Miami, where the eclipse will be around 80%.
Birds are animals that are normally active during the daytime might start shutting down as they see that light go down. But that'll all change.
Even spiders may freak out. During a past eclipse in China, entomologists reported spiders deconstructed their webs. In rural Illinois, avid birdwatcher Vicki Lang Mendenhall says she's curious about how the birds will react.
That's the beauty of wildlife. You know, you can't push a button and say, okay, all of a sudden animals do this or that. They're wild animals, so they're going to do what they're normally going to do.
Here in Carbondale, Illinois, which will have the longest total eclipse of anywhere in the continental United States, there is a carnival atmosphere, literally. Because just about everybody has one of these, the California Academy of Sciences has come up with an app so people can crowdsource their observations of what happens to animals and plants. It's called iNaturalist. Jose?
Kerry Sanders, thank you. Many of you may be wondering if weather is going to interfere with eclipse viewing where you are. Here's NBC's Dylan Dreyer with the answer. Dylan.
Good evening, Jose. It's pretty cool that most of the areas that will see totality will actually be fairly clear. Let's start in the Pacific Northwest. At about 10:19 in the morning in Madras, Oregon, Pacific time, it does look mostly clear. Same goes for Idaho over into Wyoming. It's the middle of the country where we're looking at some more clouds around, especially down near Kansas City, where we could see some scattered showers around 1:08, which is the time of totality. It looks okay in Carbondale, Illinois, where totality will last the longest. But as you get to South Carolina. Greenville looks good, mostly sunny, but once you get to Charleston, closer to the coast, we could see a few more clouds around that could partially obstruct that total eclipse. Jose?
Dylan Dreyer, thank you so much. Tune in tomorrow for live coverage of the total eclipse right here on NBC, MSNBC, and NBCNews.com. Coming up, the dramatic end to a 72-year search for a piece of U.S. naval history. Historians, undersea explorers, and naval enthusiasts alike are celebrating a major discovery in the Pacific. The wreckage of the USS Indianapolis, sunk by the Japanese in the final days of World War II, has been found. Its discovery solving one of the most infamous mysteries in U.S. naval history. Here's NBC's Steve Patterson.
That's it, Paul. We've got it. The Indy.
A dramatic end to a 72-year search. The wreckage of a famous World War II war-era ship, once thought lost forever in the dark waters of the Pacific Ocean, discovered on Friday. Microsoft's billionaire co-founder Paul Allen funded the expedition to find the USS Indianapolis.
We try to do these both as really exciting examples of underwater archaeology and as tributes to the brave men that went down on these ships.
Deep sea detective work pointed a team of civilian researchers led by Robert Kraft to the Indy's final resting place, 18,000 feet below the surface of the Pacific.
It was exciting. It was upsetting. It was very emotional. And it was humbling.
In what is the U.S. Navy's single greatest loss of life at sea, the battle-hardened heavy cruiser was shredded by two Japanese torpedoes just days after delivering components of the atomic bomb later dropped on Hiroshima. On July 30, 1945, the Indy, with nearly 1,200 on board, sank in just 12 minutes. About 800 sailors and Marines escaped the sinking ship. Only 317 of them survived after enduring days adrift in the shark-infested sea before being rescued. Only 22 are alive today.
What they did needs to be remembered and not just for getting torpedoed and sunk. They were heroes.
Tonight, the discovery resurfacing the courage and resilience of those who gave their lives in the service of our freedom. Steve Patterson, NBC News.
Coming up, a summer camp that's making a major difference in the lives of kids facing the most difficult circumstances. Finally tonight, we take you to an inspiring summer camp that is changing kids' lives by leaps and bounds. A program that through music, dance, and encouragement is giving hundreds of children the tools they need to be able to soar above life's adversities.
We can do anything.
Camp hasn't started yet, but don't tell these kids that. 100 students from some of Miami's roughest neighborhoods arrived pumped up and ready to dance at Alvin Ailey Camp.
Morning, campers!
Our kids take over the entire campus.
They learn dance, ballet, West African, and spoken word. Instructors using the arts to help these kids find their voice.
We're raising the next great generation of philanthropists, of artists, of performers, of civic leaders.
For 6 weeks, the Arts Center provides meals, transportation, even dance shoes, but mostly a safe place for expression.
There you go.
Arts Center Director of Education, Jairo Oliveros, emigrated from Mexico when he was 6 years old.
How does a kid from Aguascalientes in Mexico end up here?
I'm a product of programming like this.
Many of the children are being raised by foster care parents or other family members. Home life is often challenging.
Sometimes life is very tough.
Mm-hmm.
But you have very strong dreams, don't you?
I really do.
What are those dreams?
It's
helping my brothers and sisters, designing games, and also dancing.
Otniel's mom is in jail. He lives with his six siblings and dad.
I actually went through a situation with my family, and the aid camp actually helped. They got me clothes and shoes just for the summer, just to help me get by.
When I first joined, I was really shy and nervous, and now I'm not nervous at all.
Brianna not only found the confidence to dance,
blow it up, girl.
She formed a special bond. Christina is the first student with Down syndrome at Ailey Camp.
Why'd you become such good friends with her?
Because I want to make her feel like she's important. She really is. She's special.
Brianna lives with her grandmother. Here, she becomes the instructor.
I teach them what I learn here.
How good are they?
Every day, the camp begins and ends with affirmations.
What are some of the things that you find? That means a lot to me in your affirmations.
I am a winner because kids should always think of themselves as a winner.
I will not use can't to define my possibilities.
You are a winner, my friend. You're a winner.
Extraordinary kids and an extraordinary program. If you're interested in finding out more, I'll have information on my Twitter feed right after this broadcast. That's NBC Nightly News for this Sunday. Lester Holt will be back in tomorrow. I'm Jose Diaz-Balart reporting from New York. Thank you for the privilege of your time, and good night.